And welcome back to Coast, Professor Slim King with us as we talk about the life of Harry Houdini and magic. And get your nickel and four pennies ready. We're going to do a few tricks when we come right back. Welcome back, Professor Slim King with us. We'll get to your calls. We're going to do some magic tricks as well. One more question about Harry Houdini, Professor, and that is, what makes you convinced that he did indeed cross over the veil? And I'm sure if he did, other spirits probably have too.
Well, one of the most, what the bombshell is that in 2011, everybody thought that possibly Bess Houdini had made up this whole code thing in her mind, and it never was. And she said that she had put it in a safe deposit box and that she would get it out and show everybody that the code and everything was thought out since before 1913. Well, in 2011, in Austin, Texas, at the Harry Ransom Center at University of Texas, they got an estate of Harry Houdini, a box that said, from the estate of Harry Houdini. And Gregory Curtis opened it up, and in there he found the actual Houdini code written in her handwriting.
Wow.
It is
weird.
Bombshells. It just pretty much wipes out everybody who said that this was a farce and it didn't happen. And it's authenticated, written in her handwriting. It's got the Houdini code out there, everything.
That is good. All right, let's see how you can do a little magic on the radio, Professor. What do we do here?
All right, well, it's Halloween, right? Halloween, and I'm thinking a werewolf, right? How do you kill a werewolf?
With a stake.
With a silver bullet.
Oh, vampire with a stake.
Yeah, and I buy silver, too. Just to go along with some of your ads, I buy silver like crazy.
It's going to be a good investment.
Yes. So you have four pennies and a nickel, which is the silver bullet. So we're going to need that to kill the werewolf. So I want everyone listening to lay out the four pennies from left to right.
Lay out the four pennies from left to right.
And you, George.
All right, I'm doing it.
Lay them out from left to right.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to have you put the silver bullet, the nickel, all the way to the left.
Of the four pennies.
Directly in the center, or all the way to the right. I don't want to know.
Oh, one of three spots, you're saying.
One of three spots, all the way to the left.
Okay.
And you have your, say you put it there, there'd be...
And does it matter if the pennies are up or down, face or not?
Doesn't matter. Okay. Doesn't matter. Right. Just so long as they're from left to right. And it's dead in the dead center. The nickel is in the dead center with two pennies on each side, or all the way over with all the pennies on the left, or all the pennies on the right. So either you start with the silver bullet on the left, dead center, or on the right.
Okay.
And I'm going to have you switch with anything that's immediately to the left or to the right. You can switch that nickel with the penny that's immediately to the left of it or to the right of it. When you get to the end.
Do you have to switch it?
Yeah, you have to switch when I say.
Okay.
Switch it once or twice or whatever. So you're, but when you get to the end, you have to start switching back towards the middle again, correct?
Well, just listen to you.
Yes, so there you go. So the rule is that you have to switch with whatever immediately to the left or to the right. You can't jump over.
All right, and you haven't told us to switch yet.
No, I haven't told you. So.
Okay.
Yeah, right now, it's all the way to the left, dead center, or all the way to the right. So go ahead, everybody that's listening, and you, George, switch one time.
Okay.
Okay. Payment.
All right. Okay.
Go ahead. I don't know how which way you did or anything. Go ahead, switch for this once again.
Now, when you talk about switch, could be left or right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. And then switch once again.
Okay.
So you switch it like three times.
Three times.
Always with what's immediately to the left or right. But here, I might have an idea where it's at, but there's millions of people listening, and they're all switching different ways, and they started different places. Correct?
Right. That's right. We had three options in the beginning, right?
Right.
Okay.
This doesn't work with everyone, but I think it works about 99% of the time. So now what I want you to do is think of a magic number. A secret magic number, say between 1 and 7.
All right, got it.
You have it. Everybody else, think of their number, between 1 and 7, whatever your secret magic number is, go ahead and switch that many times.
You mean just keep doing it?
Yeah. Say if your number's 5, switch once, switch again.
Left or right again?
Yeah, either way.
All right. This is radio, so keep talking.
There's no way anybody could know where yours at. But to be doubly sure, whatever your secret magic number is, switch that many times again.
Again?
Yes.
All right. Why are you making us do it so many times?
Because I want to make sure that nobody and all the listeners think that somehow I'm, you know, I can keep track.
Well, you can't keep track. You're not watching me, that's for sure.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So, are you done?
I'm done.
Okay. Everybody, I'm looking out into the world. I want everyone to remove, I believe there's a penny all the way to the left. I want you to remove that penny.
If there is one.
If the penny all the way to the left.
Okay.
And
I'm not going to tell you if there's one there or not, but I'm just saying okay.
Yeah, a penny all the way to the right. I think that's a penny. Remove that one.
All right.
So you only have 3 left.
And we've got a nickel and 2 pennies left, theoretically.
Yeah. And now what I'd like you to do is, just in case you think I'm watching, switch the nickel one more time.
All right.
I want everyone to remove, I believe, the penny on the right. Remove that penny.
Okay.
And there's 2 left. The one on the right, pick up with your right hand. The one on the left, pick up with your left hand.
Okay.
I want everyone to put down your left hand. I believe that the silver bullet is in your right hand.
You're absolutely correct.
And I believe if people call in that you will get, you could get thousands of callers that will say exactly.
Or they can email me.
So yes, email.
There's got to be a mathematical trick. Everything has a trick to it, right?
Well, we're doing magic. So, yeah, it's magic.
There's a trick.
It's magic.
It's mathematical.
I know millions of people moving here and there. Or you. I'm not in the room.
That's something else. Interesting.
So that's all right,
let's
the
take
kind
some.
Fun let, stuff I let, like to do over let, the radio.
Let's take some calls and we'll come back. And are we going to do anything with the tarot card?
If you'd like to.
Okay. All right. Let's take a few calls for you, though. Rich in Detroit, Michigan, my old hometown. Hey, Rich.
How you doing, George?
Okay. Thanks. Thanks for calling.
I'm a longtime listener, first time caller. I'm 34. I've been listening since I was in the 6th grade. You know.
Wow. I love it.
Yep. I just find it funny that because I listen off and on, and I could tell you that I've not thought about Harry Houdini and his death and quite some time, and I honestly haven't listened to the show in a while. And tonight I got off work. I worked third shift, and I got into the truck, and I was thinking about it, and I said, man, for some reason I was thinking about Harry Houdini, and it made me turn on Coast to Coast.
And there we are talking about him.
Talking about him 92 years later, and I'm calling from Detroit. When I started listening, I lived in Tennessee at the time, but just the fact, the correlation of Houdini, Detroit, and I just want to say that I believe.
That's amazing. That's a great story. Rich, thanks for that. Houdini was in the Detroit River when he was in town before he died, was he not, Professor?
Yeah, I think that was one of his escapes.
Yeah, it really was. They dumped him in the Detroit River. I think he was in a straitjacket upside down.
Yeah, he loved doing that, and sometimes he was in a box. Houdini would modify his escapes to whatever, kind of businesses that wanted to support him. So, if the police supported him, he'd escape from one of their jail cells. There was one time he escaped from a, big fish. They built a big fish because there was a fish company that was sponsoring him in their town. So he would make up some way to escape from something that tied in to his advertisers.
Tony Curtis died in 2010. He was 85 years old, but I thought he did a great job in that Harry Houdini movie. Do you remember it?
Yes, yeah. I think all of the movies have been actually pretty good.
Yeah.
They don't stick with the actual.
How did he make that elephant disappear in the Hippodrome in London? How did he do that?
Well, can I, You want me to tell you?
Yeah, you know the trick. I mean, what did he? How did they have the thing covered, or what? First of all,
no, I can't tell. I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, come on, Slim.
I might tell you in private. There's a book you can buy by a guy who.
Well, let me ask you this: if I'm right, would you tell me?
Yes. If you are right, I'll tell you. Do I have to tell you on air?
Well, I'm just going to ask you a few questions.
Okay.
That's all. Did he have any apparatus that raised the elephant from underground?
No.
He did not. Okay. I'm going to assume that the elephant was always there.
Yes.
Okay. I'll do a little more homework after that.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, but who comes up with the tricks? I mean, was it Houdini? Does that make him a genius for being able to come up with this? Or did he have somebody on staff like you who would say, here's this trick, let's do this, and we can make this and that? How did they do this? Right. Same with Copperfield, too. I assume he has people on staff like you, right?
Exactly. Exactly. James Collins was the guy that Houdini had, that built all of them for him. But Houdini would say, I want to do this. And then he would put it in the ball in their court, and then they would have to come up with how you would do
it. So I assume in the Hippodrome, they walked an elephant out. Everybody sees this thing lumbering in.
Mm-hmm.
And then they shrouded it or cloaked it or something, and then the trick began. It's absolutely amazing. Wasn't the queen there at the time?
Well,
probably the same queen that's there now
in Europe, but I don't think she was there.
Okay.
I don't know for sure.
Next up.
But I don't think she was there. I think he performed for them in Europe.
Let's go to first time caller, Ralph in Indianapolis. Hi, Ralph. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm here.
Alrighty. Take it away.
Greetings. I knew Arthur Ford well in his last 5 years of his life. Got a letter from him just before he died about seeing Bishop Pike on a ledge when he was trying to go over to Qumran in Israel, and that's where they found him. Question for you, what year did Arthur Ford bring back the code to Mrs. Houdini?
This was in 1929.
Okay.
And it was a three-part code. The code was the middle section. The first word was Roosevelt.
Rose.
And then he had a code for the nine words that spelled out believe. And then she had five words in French, which mean I pull the curtain back like this. And that's what she told him. So he was assured that his code had gotten through.
Now, didn't she later deny that?
Later on, after she loses her friends, she loses all her money. A man called Edward Saint comes into her life and says he's her manager, but they live together.
Fell in love again.
Yeah. So
Harry didn't like that. That's why he wanted to come back.
Right. She meets him in the same kind of way that she met Houdini. There's a lot of things going on here, but he's like 20 years younger than her.
She promises her that she can
make a movie and she'll make $1 million.
Okay, go ahead, Ralph.
What year then did she deny that the code was correct?
Well, the first time, she never denies the code was correct. She says that she was fooled, but she never denies that the code was correct. But she first, about a year and a half after they're given the Houdini messages, she's having lunch with some ladies in Miami, and she said she was hesitant about Houdini coming back, because why didn't he save her from the Depression? So she thought that Houdini would somehow save her from this mass depression that was happening, or that somehow he was going to come back and have breakfast with her every morning or something. I don't know what she was thinking, but she wasn't happy about the fact that Arthur Ford was on tour somewhere, so she had no way to contact him, and so she was, you know, showing her displeasure for that. Then Edward Saint comes in later, promises her $1 million, and then they go on, and about 8 years later, they make a movie called Religious Racketeers.
Yeah, he made a couple movies at least, didn't he?
Well, Houdini made four or five movies.
Yeah. Did they all sell out? Yeah. Did they do well?
They did fine, but he was the star of every movie.
Was he like an actor, or were they more like documentaries?
He was an actor, and he always had like a really, really good looking co-star.
His real name? Eric Weiss.
Yes.
He was a pretty good looking guy too.
Kind of a stud muffin guy.
He was.
And everything, and kind of a smooth talker, could really give compliments really well, but he wasn't the greatest actor, but he used it to promote his escapes. So he had a bunch of escapes in all the movies.
Real name, Eric Weiss, huh?
Mm-hmm, yes. And that's Eric turned into Harry, and then Houdini, he got from Houdon, and he added an I and called it Houdini. And so to this day, they call him Harry Houdini, but I don't think he ever switched his name. And he was born in Europe. You know, he wasn't born here, and he was.
Yeah, he was born in Hungary.
Yeah, he was born in Hungary, Budapest, and he wasn't even actually a U.S. citizen, if you think about it.
Wasn't there a magician named Blackstone? Did he come after Harry?
Blackstone was after Harry, yeah.
Okay. Yes, he was pretty good, too, wasn't he?
He was great. He was great. There was him and his son, also, that was a junior.
Who's the artist who, David Blaine, is he a magician too?
Well, he's a very good magician. He is a mystifier. Houdini began calling himself a mystifier. He kind of dropped the magician thing.
Okay.
And so people are starting to go that way. It's part of the mystery art, you know.
When people go see a magician, do they want the trick to fail or succeed? What do you think?
Well, I think they all want it to succeed. I think you'd be a strange individual if you'd like to see the guy fall on his face.
Nah, there are some people who want to see that.
Yeah, maybe. I want
to see the trick, Professor, and then try to figure out what happened, how he did it.
Right, that's me. When I first went to Disneyland when I was a kid, I went through the Haunted Mansion because I had to know. I went through there 11 times because I had to know. Figure out how they did all those illusions.
Are there female magicians?
Yeah, Dorothy Dietrich is huge. All right. Matter of fact, Dorothy Dietrich will be doing a Houdini seance tomorrow.
Where?
I think she's in Pennsylvania.
That would be intriguing.
Yes.
Do they get media coverage these days?
Scranton, Pennsylvania, and it's the Houdini Museum. Now, I'll tell you one thing about David Copperfield. You were asking about David. David has one of the best Houdini collections in the world.
Oh, wow. There's a great one, too, at the Magic Castle in Hollywood, California, as well. But stay with us, Professor. We're going to come back in just a second or two and take final calls. All right. Elvis Presley tells a story about that song that a guy was in a hospital with his wife. He was dying, and she was sitting on the bed. And he didn't want her to see him die. And while she was sitting there, she kind of nodded off and fell asleep for a little bit. And he apparently wrote the words to that song. And that's what he left her. When she woke up, he was gone. It was just a great song. Good old Elvis Presley. Hey, tomorrow, that's the day, the big night, Ghost to Ghost, our annual tradition. Now, the first hour, Rosemary Ellen Guiley joins me to talk about haunted mirrors and some other scary things. And then we'll have the Ghost to Ghost show, which starts in the second, third, and fourth hours. We will take your calls all night long thereafter with your ghost stories. Hit us with your best story. And as you know, we were soliciting email stories over the last month or so. Tom has accumulated a great list of that. So those folks will be called with their stories as well. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm in St. Louis right now, and it's pouring outside. The poor kids for trick-or-treat and Halloween, they're going to get flooded on tomorrow. I hope it stops for at least a little bit. But and do one thing, folks, parents especially, check your kids' candy. A lot of strange people out there. And just check the candy to make sure there's no perforations or anything like that. Just be on the safe side. And welcome back. Our final segment with Professor Slim King. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. He's also on Facebook. We've got that for you as well. Are you primarily, Professor, are you a magician? Is that your trade?
I'm a singer.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What kind of music do you sing?
I sing the blues.
Good for you. And you do that all over the country or just where you're located?
Yes. I think it's safe to tell you I have the world record for singing Soul Man over 15,000 times.
I love it. How long have you been singing, since you were a kid?
Nope, I didn't really start singing until I was in my 40s.
What possessed you to start doing that?
I looked a lot like a TV movie star.
Like a Blues Brothers?
You got it.
I love it.
And so in 1989, I did my very first Blues Brothers show.
We know Danny Aykroyd well. He listens to the show. I've met him a couple times. A great guy and a great talent. Belushi was too. God rest his soul, huh?
Right. Have you read A History of Ghosts by his, I think it's his grandfather?
Yes, wrote? Yes.
That is an amazing book.
Great stuff. Let's take a few more calls and then let's do something with the tarot cards, okay?
Okay.
I'll figure out what we can do with that. Let's go to Adele in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hi, Adele.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I wanted to know if the professor knew that Arthur Ford had a spirit guide named Fletcher.
Fletcher?
Yes.
Yes. Arthur Ford's spirit guide was Fletcher, and Fletcher was the one who actually delivered the code. Fletcher was the spirit that talked to Houdini and Houdini's mother on the other side.
Tell us more, Adele.
Yeah, no, I had a girlfriend. Her uncle studied under him.
Uh-huh.
He was a healer, so he told us a lot about him.
Small world indeed. How did you learn so much, Professor, about all these people?
Well, Arthur Ford is actually from Florida here. He's from Titusville. And so when I first started, getting interested in, did somebody actually talk from the other side? I just started drilling down on all these various people that I considered that were possibly real psychics. And he's one. He toured the world. He wrote three or four books. I have a book from library that Arthur Ford wrote. And, I mean, dozens and dozens of people checked these books out for years and years. And he was a really, really realistic, and I consider a real medium.
Let's go to the island of Oahu in Hawaii. Carlos is with us. Hello there, Carlos.
Aloha, George.
How's things in Hawaii?
Oh, great.
Super.
It's been very, very, very humid the last couple of days. We had 94% humidity.
Wow. Well, you do have a lot of water around you, don't you?
Yeah, but we very rarely get rain. It's always, every day is beautiful in Hawaii.
It sure is. All right, go
I
ahead.
I know how Harry Houdini did the elephant trick.
How?
The way that he did it was he...
And are you guessing or you know this?
No, I know it for a fact.
Okay.
It was a trick that spanned two different shows, because in the one show, he made the elephant disappear, and in the second show, he made the elephant reappear.
All right.
And what he did was he used Delta technology. He used time travel. He transported the elephant. He used quantum teleportation, and he transported the elephant from the one show to the second show into the future.
Ooh, now, well, tell us, excellent. Professor, what do you think of that?
I think that's a great answer.
I think there's another answer, and you're holding back. All right, Carlos, thanks. Interesting take, though. Interesting take. All right, we've got more calls rolling in here, but let's do something with the tarot cards. What do we do?
All right. Can we do something maybe with that blue piece of plastic first that everybody...
Oh, absolutely. Sure thing.
I try to do something that I don't...
Actually, mine's a red piece. Mine's a red...
I try to do a new one every time.
Okay.
So let's try this. I want you to get that piece of plastic out, put it in front of you.
And just let me explain to people what it looks like. It's about 3.5-4 inches long. It starts off really low and then goes to like a little mound and then it's down. And it looks like a half of a hot dog, but it's red plastic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have a red one?
Yeah, mine is red.
Okay.
Well, does that have anything to do with it?
No.
Okay.
I thought I gave you a blue one.
But yeah. No, I got a red one.
All right. Here's what I want everybody to do. I want everybody to think counterclockwise. Everybody who's listening, think counterclockwise. Use your brain, push counterclockwise. I want you to go ahead and spin that counterclockwise.
Spin it counterclockwise.
Counterclockwise.
Well, let's get something I can spin it on here. How about the box you gave me? Okay, done.
Anything that's
okay.
Solid.
It's done.
Does it spin pretty good counterclockwise? We're all thinking counterclockwise.
It's okay, yeah.
Counterclockwise. Go ahead and try that one more time, counterclockwise. Everybody's getting in the vibe. Everything's vibrations.
Done.
Now what I want you to do is, everybody's thinking counterclockwise, I want you to try to spin it clockwise and see what happens.
Well, it's spun.
Try to spin it and see if it slows down, if we can stop it from spinning.
You want to stop clockwise. It from me doing it clockwise?
Yeah, go ahead. Get on a nice clean surface. Spin it clockwise.
All right, here we go. Well, it's pointing up and down.
So did it spin or did it just...
Yeah, it went like half.
Is it spinning as good as it spun the other way?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, we're trying to stop it. So one last time, go ahead and give it a try.
All right. Clockwise?
It's clockwise, and we're going to try to stop it from spinning.
All right. Here it goes. It's still spinning.
All right. Well, that one didn't work.
That was a... It's really supposed to stop?
Yeah. If you can get a flat surface, this is what I call natural magic.
Interesting.
If you get a really smooth, flat surface and spin it on, you'll see that it spins counterclockwise really well, and it doesn't spin clockwise very well at all. And it's how people can use objects, natural-looking objects, to fool people.
All right, let's take some more calls before we hit the tarot card.
Okay.
Linda in Windsor, Canada, near Detroit. Hi, Linda.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I really enjoyed you joining your guest tonight. The nickel worked for me.
Did it? Same thing. It's weird.
All right, now I got to ask a question, and then you got to answer me this honestly. Do any of the magicians use holograms in their acts?
Eisenheim did in The Illusionist, that movie.
Yes, he did. If you would call holograms, or would you a three-dimensional image?
Well, holograms look so much like the real thing. That's what I thought he used when he did the elephant. I thought holograms look so real.
Like, God, I don't think they had holograms in those days.
Yeah, they didn't have holograms back in the 20s. But if everybody thinks about what do you normally think about when you say, how do they do that? People say, smoke and mirrors, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you stick with that concept, that you might get a little closer.
Now they have holograms at concerts. They're bringing Michael Jackson back from the dead, Roy Orbison, and they look like they're really there.
Yeah, Elvis. The Elvis one.
Freddie Mercury.
Right.
It's amazing stuff.
So into that, I think that's going to be awesome.
Yep. Thanks, Linda. But what about today's magicians? Anybody using holographic magic?
No one I know of, because I think people are onto it. You know, they could see.
It's obvious, right.
Right.
And it doesn't look, I mean, it still looks like a light.
Right. It still looks like somebody would say, oh, that's a hologram.
Yep.
Because exactly. They haven't perfected it yet. I don't think, you know, maybe someday if they do, I don't put it past any magician to try it. But,
Let's go to Rick in Olympia, Washington. Hey, Rick, go ahead.
Hey there, George. It's Rick, the quantum pharmacist.
Good to have you with us, sir.
Good to talk to you again. Anyway, often, as it was again tonight, you bring up the James Randi Educational Foundation $1 Million Challenge. And Slim there mentioned that it has been terminated. Yes, it has been. So I went upstairs. I have an official $1 Million Challenge application in with James Randi. I got the paperwork notarized right here in front of me from July 8, 2010. And we worked out the protocols over the years, and I found it very curious that after we got things worked out, that's when they decided to terminate the $1 million challenge. I have several ways to validate this in an objective, tangible manner on a couple things that I do. And that's one of the chapters of the book I'm writing. It's about these $1 million challenge, because there are many, many other challenges worldwide, but I'm now going to reignite and challenge all of them.
Why not? Do you think that organization, Rick, had the $1 million set aside?
No, they don't even provide the $1 million. The $1 million was put up by an internet businessman named Rick Adams. He is who provided the $1 million. It was not James Randi. You can Google all of this.
Really? Okay.
I got quite involved.
But nobody ever collected it, right?
No, they did not. And I felt there was a great lack of sincerity and true scientific inquiry in researching this in a serious way.
Yes, you are 100% correct. That the James Randi, JREF $1 million paranormal challenge, it was actually two challenges. You had to win the challenge first before they would ever even come out and write a contract. And as far as I know, there was never a contract written that said, if you do this, I will give you $1 million.
And by the way, for the record, we have over the years invited him on the program, James Randi, and he has respectfully declined. Yeah, I thought he'd be an interesting interview, but he just doesn't want to come on the program.
The caller is a very good reason why, because this is a story I hear all the time, because I myself signed up for the $1 million challenge to see if it was on the level. And after trying to negotiate with them to come up with a protocol, they said, you're not working in good faith. And they terminated my application.
Interesting. Slim, let me ask you this. We have had regularly on the program Uri Geller. I think the world of the guy. And he's been able to do things that many people cannot. However, he's still being accused of being a great magician when he bends these spoons in front of people's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on Uri Geller?
Well, I'll just say this. Uri Geller came down to Orlando and lectured here at the Magic Convention.
Were you there?
So that's how I answer that question.
Well, I'm not sure if you've answered it yet. That's the, you know, he makes speeches. He goes all over the place,
mm-hmm.
whether it's magicians or not. Did he do any spoon bending while he was there?
I didn't see him do any.
Okay.
But I'm not saying he didn't do it. I think Uri Geller is a very, very unique entertainer.
I mean, because you believe in life after death, right?
Yes, I do. I believe in a spiritual world.
Do you believe in telepathy?
Yes.
Psychokinesis?
I believe in that.
And maybe he has this incredible ability to bend things with his mind.
It could be. It could be. I can't disprove him.
Now,
I couldn't stop him from doing what he's done over the years. And there's a lot of scientists and stuff that he performed for, and they couldn't find anything either.
No, they couldn't catch him. They couldn't catch him. But he could be, as I've said, and I've told him, I said he could be the world's greatest mentalist or one of the world's greatest sleight-of-hand magicians out there.
Exactly.
Because I have looked, and now, you know, he explained what happened when he was on the Johnny Carson show, that they set him up, and he was mm-hmm. nervous, and he thought his career was over. He wasn't able to do anything. But I can understand that sometimes.
Yeah, they set him up. And to get things to work appropriately, you have to have them going your way. You know, you have to have the vibe, the feel, everything. And it doesn't take very much for any kind of a performer to get off his game. And so I would think on national TV, something like that would be pretty crazy.
I think so, too.
I worked with a show called Phenomena 10
yep.
years ago.
Great show.
And my best friend, Jim Callahan, was on there. And he went into a trance, got a hold of Raymond Hill, and told Raven Simone what she had hidden in this box.
I love that. Well, Slim, You're welcome back anytime, Professor. Great talking to you. Your website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Folks, don't forget Ghost to Ghost tomorrow night. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasore, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borrells, Tim Banal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.